Hello and welcome to another edition of the CBB Super Show. I am your host, Walter Waddell, aka Dub Deuces, bringing you the podcast edition and joined by my partner in crime, Pete Cole, the man that covers many sports. Pete, how are you feeling this morning?
Good morning. It's not too bad. I had a little rough night last night on CBB, but right back at it today. 7-game slate I'm looking at, so nothing better than getting right back at it. Win some money here.
Hell yeah. There's a big, like, Saturday, they haven't posted the slate yet, but they got a couple of tournaments there, and there's a big, like, 167 entrant, $100 tournament that I'm thinking about entering on Saturday, and they got some other bigger one there that's a $8. So, yeah, the best way to get over a bad night is to keep firing it out. It's actually not a bad slate, really, heading into the last game for me, personally, but then, I don't know, Evan Mobley's broken, I guess, because he just can't seem to go off anymore, and then Zaire Williams is just, I mean, I'm not going to call him a hack, but that was a pretty bad performance last night in front of many NBA scouts. So, I don't know. That was just a horrific game to end the night on. But we have a 7-gamer here. We're ready to go. No super late games. So you won't have to stay up all night. For those of you on the East Coast, we have a few, you know, rematches of games from a couple of days ago with that West Virginia TCU, a couple of fast-paced games, a couple of slower games, and then a game with a team that I was just talking about, TCU, before the show. That's on the slate, and they're typically not. So let's just dive right in here. If you guys are listening live and you do have any questions, feel free to ask those in the general room, which is right underneath the Your Fielder's Choice emblem on your left. Also, if you're not a member already, we are running a March Madness promo through the end of the month. 50% off, so $25 gets you access to every single sport that we offer. Everything from esports to NHL to wiffle ball, you name it, we cover it. So definitely join us and start winning some money. Michigan State versus Michigan here. This should be an absolute bloodbath. Michigan State's still hovering around that bubble line. I was looking last night at some the bracket matrix, which is all, you know, all these different bracketologists averaged out, and Michigan State's still fringe tournament, but I think this should be the KO blow for them. KenPom does have it 77-62 in favor of Michigan. There are 231 Temple ranking, Michigan State 164. Michigan laid an absolute egg recently. I mean, the worst I've seen them play, you know, all season, obviously, there against Illinois, an AO-less Illinois team. So expect that, and that was at home. So expect them here. You know, this is their, I think they're playing a double-double, or a doubleheader, I should say, with Michigan State, and one at home, one on the road. So I think this is the last home game. So it'd be, you know, senior night if they have them. And they want to go out on a high note here. So I think, you know, they're going to be pissed coming off that Illinois loss. So they're going to be taking it out on Michigan State here. So, you know, Franz Wagner at 7-8 is back in play. He had a really big dud. I would have liked to seen his price come down to the low 7K, but DK didn't do it. He's typically going to be safe. Isaiah Livers is there at 7-2, which is an interesting price. He did, I don't know what the extent of his ankle injury that he suffered in the second half of their last game against Illinois. He was having a rough game anyways, so I don't know. I don't think that's going to keep him out from what I've been reading, but it is something, you know, that's flared up, so we'll have to keep an eye on. If he were to miss, you know, that would obviously upgrade guys like Shondi Brown, Mike Smith, their usage for them, Brown's playing time, and then maybe even a guy like Brandon Johns, who is talented, and I think that with minutes he could actually do some damage. Dickinson is down to 7K. I'm sort of interested in him now. Earlier in the season he was so cheap, and he didn't it was unchecked. You know what? Davis was out, so he had no one to take playing time from him. And he was a great play. We used him all the time. And then his price, you know, rose up to the 8K range, and he just really wasn't that appealing with his minutes. But now that he's down to 7K, it's a playable, you know, marker for him. He is facing Michigan State team that has been just brutalized by interior players time and time again. Dickinson's still fourth on the KenPom Player of the Year rankings, which is it's really wild to me because he doesn't seem like he's had a season that would warrant that kind of ranking on KenPom. You know, he's very analytical, obviously. But you look at his efficiency rankings, you know, he has a top 200 offensive rating, 26% usage rate, 26% shot rate, top 70 true shooting percentage, offensive rebounding rate of 12.5%, which is top 60, 21.5% defensive rebounding rate, a 6% block rate. He draws 5 fouls per 40, has one of the highest free throw rates on the team. So when he gets to the foul line, he's making them. He's a 76% free throw shooter, so he's not one of those 7-footers that, you know, hack-a-shacks it or whatever. There's a lot to like about Dickinson, and I know people are probably hearing me talk about him like, what? This is the guy that you say, you know, fuck this guy basically usually all the time because I never roster him. But, you know, matchup, price, there's just a combination of things here. Now, looking at the roster of Michigan, you know, Shondi Brown's a senior, Mike Smith, and then they got a guy named Jerron Fald. So I don't know if Fald would get a a token start here as a senior on senior day, but I wouldn't worry about it. You know, if Livers is out, definitely don't worry about it. But if we don't see Dickinson in the starting lineup for whatever reason because of senior day, don't necessarily panic. I still think he'll see his 25 to 28 minutes regardless and still be able to do damage at 7K. So I did want to put that out there because we've been seeing some weird starts. You know, obviously Penn State last night, they started three guys, and it's just token starts for seniors to get them into the, you know, action and say, hey, I played on the ball boy manager. I got water, but I got into a game kind of thing. On the Michigan State side of things, Langford, man, you called it about a month ago on the show. You said, you know, Langford, he's just, I feel like he's, you know, turned a corner. He's going to be doing well, and he is now. It's, you know, finally back on February 20th, he had a 30-point game, and ever since then, he's had 42, 21, 29, 31, really consistently grabbing a ton of rebounds. And he looks really good, like the Langford of old, you know, from almost 3 years ago at this point. At this point, I feel more comfortable with him than I do Aaron Henry, even though Aaron Henry did have a nice game, 44 fantasy points against Indiana. Everyone smacks him around, but he's up to 9K now against Michigan. That's extremely difficult to ask. I think Langford is probably the most playful Spartan at 6'7". You know, he's experienced, would be able to handle these guys. I'm not really looking at, you know, Rocket Watts is down to 3'7", where maybe people, and I know I'm the creator and proprietor of the, oh, once a guy slips under 4K, he's the man, he's playable. We saw it with Locke yesterday and Greg Williams, you know. But Rocket Watts is just, he's exempt from that from that modifier, so don't worry about playing him today. Gabe Brown, I guess, has been playing well, but I typically just don't target guys against Michigan. So that's kind of my spiel on this game. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, so yeah, Michigan State is nobody. I mean, Aaron Henry's too expensive. Langford would be the play, like you said. You look at his logs, they look good. I mean, he's five straight games over 20, but nowhere is near a main lineup. I see Mike Smith. Mike Smith is popping in projections, but well, I guess because his price 4 or 5, but I think a lot of that is if there's going to be a blowout, you'll see Smith in for a lot of the game and probably get over 30 minutes if it is, but anybody else can take. I can't take him in, you know, a top couple lineups. Wagner may be the play because people with, you know, with short memories or long memories may actually think of his last game. He may have turned him off, so this might be a good bounce back spot for him too. He gets a kind of a probably a little bit of a pace boost too. So, I mean, one of these guys could be in one of your top lineups, but there's nobody like I have to have. Everybody's pretty much blah to me, you know. Eli Books, Dickinson, they're all there. You can use them, but there's nobody I'm like, yeah, I got to have those guys. So Brooks's price at 5'3", to me, may be the most nicely looking, actually. I mean, he plays almost 30 minutes a night, right? So he would probably, actually, his price would probably be the best out of all of them. But I'm probably staying away from most of these guys. I just think they're all appropriately priced, and I don't know. I think it's going to be a blowout senior night. Maybe some guys may lose some extra minutes because, like you said, there's a lot of seniors there, too. So, you know, a guy like Dickinson may lose, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. So, to me, I really don't see anybody you got to have, like, in your main cash lineup, just GPP guys. If you do anything, it'd probably be Wagner because he's Wagner.
Yeah, and I like the Mike Smith call out a little bit there at 4-5. That is, you know, the cheapest he's been in quite some time. If this was – he wanted to go out on top, you know, as the Columbia version of himself, you know, the guy with the 30% usage when he was on Columbia mm-hmm. last season and prior years, and that would be a really nice spot. Maybe he does sell. And then Wake Forest transfer Shondi Brown, you know, if he were to draw a start at 3-8, or, like I said, if Livers were to be out, I think he would rise in the rankings and become one of the, you know, top values because – you give Shondi 25 to 28 minutes there with no Livers, you know, I think he would absolutely pulverize this price. So yeah. Definitely, and luckily it's one of the early games. So I think those are the two guys to definitely pay attention to. And then, like I said, Dickinson, I think it's for safety, for cash. You can roll him at that price. But yeah, his upside may be capped right now due to senior night. All right, next game here, and this is an exciting one. I really am going to be heavily involved in this one, and I think a lot of people will probably do the same. Oklahoma State. Versus Baylor. KenPom has an 81-69 in favor of Baylor. I think that's probably well too big. It's going to be much closer than that. Baylor is kind of limping along here. They got a much needed overtime win recently that they had to have against West Virginia after coming off that spanking at the hands of Kansas. You know, obviously their one seed's pretty well intact, but you just don't want to go into the tournament limping like that, facing a red hot Oklahoma State team that, I don't know, man. I'm confused. Yeah, you know, I pride myself on being smart at this college basketball stuff, but I thought they were that they're banned from the tournament, but Joe Lunardi has them projected as a 4 seed. So I don't know. Maybe they're eligible for the tournament now.
I thought they were too.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going on with that. I'll have to figure that out. I'm sure somebody listening knows. 43rd in the tempo ranking for Oklahoma State. Baylor 181. Should be a really good game. Overtime potential for sure. Going to be lots of points. Number one misprice of the slate right here is Jared Butler. And you may say that, well, he hasn't really played, you know, that well, but he has, you know, outside of the Kansas game, which was the worst game of his life. I would never expect to see Jared Butler play as bad as he did against Kansas, where he was 2 for 9 in 29 minutes, fouled out, had 5 real points, 10 fantasy points. That's just, that just isn't Jared Butler. Kansas did a nice job of shutting them down. Obviously they almost lost to Iowa State in their first game back. They weren't really fully going now. I think that overtime win against West Virginia is going to get them back to where the level they were playing before their little break, with COVID stuff. And you can expect him to be back up over 30 fantasy points again today. So 7-9, he's a guy that's going to be a core lock. Expect him to be the cover boy of the article. I'm sure everyone in the industry will be all over him. He'll be today's Nate Watson. Not quite the greatest price as Nate Watson was last night at 5-8, but 7-9 for Butler, who's a 9K player at the end of the day. Is a really nice price, and I think he's going to do damage here against Oklahoma State. You need to look back and see Oklahoma State. They play fast. Defensively, they make good stops and stuff, but they're very fantasy-friendly defense. We just saw most recently our guy Austin Reeves tore him up for back-to-back 38-plus fantasy point games. Expect the same from Butler. Also, you can look at Davion Mitchell at 7-6 for 300 less. He'd probably be your GPP guy. He's been actually playing pretty well. Macy Oteague at 6K. He's in play as well. I pretty much like all those guys. Butler has a usage rate of 26.8%. Mitchell's right around 21%. Teague right around 21%. So the nice thing about Mitchell, he has a 27.6% assist rate, and Teague is more of kind of the glue guy, does all the dirty work and draws fouls, all that good stuff. But yeah, those three are a very solid nucleus. Now, if you want to get fancy and play a value guy here, you could look at playing a guy like Matthew Mayer at 3-5. He's a guy that for 2 seasons now we've heard, hey, wait till next year. He's going to be the man. And they said that last year. And he hasn't been able to break through because there's so many studs in front of him. He just can't break and get the playing time. That last game, though, he finally did get some playing time against West Virginia. And it really showed his talent. He played 27 minutes, Flo Thombaugh always starts, but he gets his 12, 15 minutes and Flagler come over from Presbyterian has had a really nice season, but Mayer, had 18 points, 5 rebounds, 4 steals. Obviously that jacked up his stat line a lot, but he is a very talented guy and a guy that can score and people might be surprised to know this. But he does have the second highest usage rate on the team when he is on the floor at 24.7% and a shot rate of 25.3%, which is also right behind Jared Butler. So, does a lot of good things. Almost a 5% steal rate, which is number one on the team. Draws 4.1 fouls per 40, shooting 47% from long range on 45 attempts. All the guy really needs is playing time to mash. He's typically going to play 15 to 18 minutes against Oklahoma State. If this gets into a track meet and Baylor needs scoring, they're not going to get it from Flo Thamba. They typically won't get it from Mark Vidal. As much as I like Vidal, he's more of get rebounds, Dennis Rodman type. They may end up having to play Mayer and go a little smaller. There's a pretty tall guy, actually. What is he, 6'9"? He can defend the four if he has to. So they can go with him and make Vidal play the five and kind of run that lineup, which is what they did against West Virginia at times in that overtime game. So I could see him playing 20-plus minutes at 3-5 in this particular matchup. He could do some damage. I'm curious of what his ownership may be. I think people might be a little freaked out about that play because it may look like a chase on the outside. If you dig into the numbers a little bit, all he really needs is the minutes. On the Oklahoma side, your guy Cade Cunningham's had a great season. He's 9. He really kind of – that second Oklahoma game, they made a point to shut him down a bit and make other guys beat him. He's got guard forward eligibility. He's always in play. More of a GPP guy today. I don't think I'm going to invest 9-3. You do have several options here below 5K. Rondell Walker at 4-8 has been starting. Bryce Williams, who I know you used last late at 4-7. He had a nice game. Bryce Williams scares me because – there's been times that earlier this season when he's been this price and he'll play 38 minutes and he'll just stand around. So maybe this new version of him will be here to stay. And if it is, 4-7 is a great price. Isaac Lugo likely is, 4-7. If he were to play, he's been questionable. If he plays, of course, that'll knock down Walker and Williams, in terms of viability. And then if you could figure out which game Caleb Boone is going to go off, 6-6 is a pretty decent price for him for GPPs because he only needs 25 to 28 minutes to really shred that price. Boone has been, he's been a revelation this season. Next year, he's going to be an absolute monster. Has a 21.6% usage rate, a 10.5% offensive rebounding rate, 7% block rate, which is top 75 in the country, and a total rebounding rate of almost 30%. So a lot to like about him, too. I want a lot of exposure to this one, Pete. What are you thinking here? Who are you prioritizing?
Yeah, I guess first, to me, Meyer, and he may be popular, but he's popping at 3-5. And, man, he really did it. He played a hell of a game the other night. I mean, dude was all over the place. He was jumping all over the place. He was diving. So, I mean, he impressed a lot of people, and he would be starting on any other team in the nation, probably, beside this team.
Yeah.
That's how good he is. And the only problem is he had a bunch of, he was playing so well, he had like 27 minutes, but if you look at every other game before that, he hasn't been over 15. That's the only thing that would scare me. But yeah, at 3-5, he only needs to get you, 12, 13 points, and there's games he's playing 15 minutes, he's getting 25, 26 DK points. So I probably would just be hesitant personally using him in as a cash, but he's there. I mean, he's cheap, and he could definitely go six, eight times on you. So Meyer's there. On Oklahoma State, if Kelly is out, I do like Bryce Williams again. Williams, he's been in a hell of a slump, and he came out of it against Oklahoma. A lot of it was because they had him guarding Reeves, and he actually did a really good job guarding Reeves. I mean, Reeves still got some points, but he really, like peripherals, but he really made Reeves work for him. After the game, Reeves said how good of a job Williams did on him. So if Kelly's out, I may actually go toward Williams again, but the problem is he's got to be hot, and he got hot the other night. So if he's in one of his slumps, so yeah, then you're going to get stuck. So maybe he's more of a GBP play. He's stuck with, a 4-point night or whatever, but if he's hot, he'll get you what you need. Rondell Walker too had a decent, last couple of games been decent. That's what Kelly out also. So, man, Butler, I don't have to repeat what you said. That's a lot. Just put him in your lineup. To me, it's a misprice. And do you need two from Butler in this game? Because there's some other plays out there. Not too sure. So I'd probably rate a Butler one and Bryce Williams two for me if Kelly's out. Yeah. And these other guys, I mean, you already talked about, but they're all in play. Teague and Mitchell. Probably like Mitchell a bit more than Teague.
Yeah. you might not need two from Baylor necessarily, but, two from the game I think is fine, one from each side. There's going to be lots of points. And Baylor, earlier in the season they were a non-targetable defense, but right now it's, we've had this conversation at the different levels in the premium room with Devin and stuff and talking about, there's nobody in the NBA locking guys down defensively, and there's a lot of that happening in college now too. Even Virginia, who is historically slow, great pack line defense, they're giving up big fantasy totals. So guys, they can score on Baylor, so I definitely think you want exposure to this game, because it to me it feels like the game of the day. A lot on the line, two elite, top level teams facing off, so it'll be interesting. Next game here is a rematch of a game from February 23rd ish TCU versus West Virginia. Ken Pom has an 81-67 in favor of West VA. They're 132nd Temple ranking, 2 CU, 271. We like to look back, especially in games that just happened. West Virginia won 74-66 in this one. It was a big-time Culver game. He had 18 points, 14 rebounds, a block, steal, a couple of assists, 50% from the field. He also shot 14 free throw attempts, only made 6. But they are going to be fouling him a lot. If that shows you anything, he's going to manufacture points at the foul line. Hopefully he makes more than that. He's only 7'3 today. I haven't really been using Culver. I think the last time I used Culver was, when Shishibwe was on the team back in November, December. And I typically won't mess with him, but he's been priced up over 8. And it's just, we know West Virginia. We know Huggy Bear. If he gets pissed, he's going to bench you. But I think this is an excellent spot to target Culver. Even if he doesn't get 30 minutes, he's going to dice this TCU squad again. I think he's my favorite play, even more so than Deuce McBride. McBride's a very solid play as well. He's only 7'5". He's typically not going to burn you. I know against Kansas State, he was a big letdown, but if you look back and you see against Baylor, he scored 44, and he's been hovering right around 30. So the price of 8K or more really caps the ceiling, and I would like to see him even, lower than this, 7K, 6'7", something like that, but he's definitely in play. I, however, prefer Culver, which is unlike me. I typically don't target Culver, but I think this is a game to go with him. So expect foul trouble there, of course. And then on the TCU side, there's some interesting price guys here. You know, Chuck O'Bannon at 3.9, another source of value. You know, we had these slates with all the value kind of suck at times because scores tend to be high, but your margin for error is basically zero, and you really can't miss. You know, we hit on Greg Williams last night, but most of the industry did. Zaire obviously was a bust. Noah Locke, who we mentioned on the podcast, he got hot in the first half, and he ended up making value even though the second half was trash. Darian Sebron had 17 and 13. Kid's a fucking animal. So you really can't miss on these values when there's so many. So, you know, I would encourage you, if you look at Chuck O'Bannon and say, well, this guy's, you know, is popping off the charge, I want to use him. If you bust against West Virginia, you're going to be way behind because there's going to be other value that you know, just demolishes. But he is in a good spot there at 3.9 if he gets the minutes. You got the YFC favorite. I say that with sarcasm. Mike Miles at 6.2. He's always a good price when he's at that 6K range, but we know his floor is literally zero somehow. So I don't know. I'm one of the proponents of, you know, we got to have a short memory, but I do hold grudges. And Miles, I still have a grudge on him. So I think if I were going to play between him and Nembhard, I would go up to Nembhard because it's only a $600 difference. And Nembhard's more of a proven commodity. So at 6'8", I would much rather like him, a guy who's hovering, you know, a straight floor of about 30. I know the Texas Tech game was rough, but Texas Tech, you know, people forget how good their defense really is. I know they're not talked about the same this year because they've been down, but he's typically at this price going to hit 4X in his sleep. Whereas Mike Miles, for a little bit less, you know, he might struggle to get that 4 or 5X number because he's really, you know, more of a shooter. I know his assist numbers have been two of the last three games over 4 assists, but he's typically just not going to hit that as hot as much as Nembhard. Nembhard has, you know, much better efficiency numbers for my money. Usage rate over 28%, shot rate over 28%, assist rate over 25%, draws almost 5 fouls per 40, whereas Miles, you know, 23%, which is good usage, 26% shot rate, but his assist rate's about 21, doesn't draw fouls at a higher rate, you know, 3. His three-point shooting's about the same. Just overall, I think Nembhard's just a better play. Miles may end up being the better, you know, all-around player 2 years, 3 years down the road, but right now, Nembhard's the guy. And then O'Bannon, just to kind of seal that one a little bit, 20% usage rate, 22% shot rate, 18% defensive rebounding rate, 3% block rate, and 2.5% steal rate. And he's shooting 39% from long range on 61 attempts. So O'Bannon, you know, he may be better play than people actually realize. Again, just he's sort of like Mayer, though, right? If he doesn't get the minutes, then we're doomed. But if he plays 20-plus minutes, he'll get there. So it's another one of those values that, you know, he's got to get those minutes. We can't guarantee it. But if he does, he's going to be, you know, just crushing the slate. So another Big 12 game with lots of options here, Pete. How are you deciphering this?
Yeah, I see O'Bannon popping too. But like you said, like Mayer, he's one of these guys. He's all over the place. 18 minutes, 24, 11, 22, 13, 29. The price correlates, obviously, with that 3.9, but those kind of minutes scare me because you never know what he's going to get. So to me, he's more of a GPP play. And out of TCU, Nembhard is probably the top GPP play to me. You know, he's still capable of going off. He's got the, you know, good the shot usage and all that. So, but that's all they are is definitely Nembhard over Miles for me. But GPP, on the other side, to me, yeah, this is a Culver slate. 7.3, I like the price. I don't think I've played Culver yet this year either. And this may be the day. And he's had a down couple games here since the big blow up against TCU, so this might be a great bounce spot for Culver. I kind of like it. 18 points, 14 rebounds, at 43 DK against these guys, and it was not too long ago. So I know it's a Huggins team, and it scares me, but if I'm going to play anybody, it's going to be definitely Culver over McBride. I do like Culver today. But that's it for me. All of these, you know, could be a great game, but I can't trust these minutes from most of these guys.
Yeah, definitely. And Taz Sherman is, you know, back healthy again. Played the last few games, two of his last three. He's been over 25 fantasy. Well, actually, three of his last four over 20 fantasy points. But the price is now up to 5.6. So yeah, a little bit more of a decision there. Next game, UCF versus ECU. KenPom has it 68-67 in favor of UCF. They're 252 tempo ranking. ECU 190. There's actually a couple of plays here for ECU. UCF in the past has had a decent defense, and they've been a team that you necessarily don't want to target against. But right now, they're pretty fantasy friendly. I mean, even, you know, when they play Temple's, you know, got three or four guys making value. So it starts with Jaden Gardner for this ECU team. You know, junior's very good. it plays 87% of the minutes. It's top 70 in his position. 26.7% usage rate, 27.8% shot rate. His combined rebounding rate is almost 30%. Offensively is 7%. Draws 6 fouls per 40. Gets the one of the best foul rates on the team. Shoots to 76% from the foul line. So when he does get there, he's going to be making them. The price is a little high, but at 8.3, I think, you know, for a guy that's pretty much coasting into 30, you know, as a floor, I think 8.3 is fine. We get wrapped up into that. But once this guy hits 8K, you know, if we don't see 40 as much, we just don't want it. But sometimes that 35, you know, 30, 35 is fine. You know, if we don't get 5X, last night I thought we'd need 5X from everyone. And it ended up not being the case. I mean, if you had Drew Smith, you cash because he went nuts. But there's a lot of guys, you know, that were chalked that didn't do well. Castleton or, you know, guys like Leshefsky, who I really like, that just made the 4X, and that would have been fine. So I think if Gardner gets you, you know, 33 tonight at 8.3, certainly not going to be mad. The other guy I like on this team quite a bit is Tremont Robinson-White. When I was going through this late last night, as I look over at some projections, I see he's popping, so it's not like he's going to be a secret. He's only 4-5. He does have bust potential, so I don't want to lead you guys to think that it's another value lock or anything. But he does have a 20% usage rate. He has a 19.5% shot rate. There's a lot to like about him. Baruti is Bitumba Baruti and T. Jackson are both out or have been out. They've had some injury issues, you know, with Miles and a couple other guys. So expect, you know, Robinson White to play roughly 30 minutes today. He does have a lower floor of 10 because if his shot's not falling, then, you know, it's going to be tough for him simply because of the rest of his rates. But he does have a 28.4% assist rate. He's the best three-point shooter on the team at 37% on 62 attempts. You know, I don't know that I am in love with the idea of playing two ECU guys, but again, I kind of set it up with UCF's defense not being that great nowadays because I think it's fine. And the price dictates that you can run, you know, TRW and then go ahead and pay up for Gardner. I think both are very safe. I think both can combine for their salaries together for 5X or more. So I'm on board with those guys. There's a couple of UCF too. I've been doing a lot of talking, so I'm going to diverge to you here and have you tell us about any UCF guys you like and maybe what you're doing with ECU as well.
So yeah, I guess TRW 4-5. I like Keegan Murray tonight too with Nunjel, but TRW probably is the best play down there beside Murray to me. But he does have that low floor. You saw last game he played 26 minutes and he didn't even make a shot. So but he's also showing, he said he's also had some big games. So for, and Garton, yeah, I guess, man, it's a tough one for ECU.
Important to note, they haven't played since February 8th also. Yeah, maybe that's a problem.
I think Gardner's is too high at 8-3 to risk for me, more GPP. So probably to me only TRW on that side. On UCF, definitely. I like Darren Green at 5-7, but he's a GBP play because he's got to get hot. He's got to if he gets shooting a ball and, you know, starts nailing threes, and he could definitely pile up the points, but more GBP. And the other guy, Isaiah Adams. Isaiah Adams, I really liked him. I played him a bunch of times this year. His price now, yeah, has gone up to 6-3. And I think Adams is all hinging on, is CJ Walker playing or not? I think Walker's trending toward out. If C.J. Walker's out, Adams will be back in the lineup, and he's putting up some really decent games when he's been starting. So we got to – that's an early game anyway. Is this an early game? Yeah. It's 9 o'clock. But if Walker's out, Adams could be, to me, one of very likely could be my main lineup because he's shown it. The last two games he's put up, he's averaging like over 30 DK. So I like Isaiah Adams a lot tonight as long as CJ's out. So that's really, honestly, that's really it. Gardner's too high for me. I'm not paying 8-3 for Jaden Gardner, especially when they haven't played in so long. But TRW is in play at 4-5. And yeah, that is pretty much it.
That makes sense. Maybe that keeps his ownership down. And, you know, maybe he ends up being a sneakier play. Because, yeah, playing two ECU guys seems pretty rough. I agree with you. But it's one of those things where I may pull the trigger. I'm still deciding. I haven't tried to build yet. But yeah, I like the call out on Darren Green. Brandon Mahan is 6-1. He hasn't, you know, he started the season off on fire. He's kind of one of those non-con heroes. You know, he was never that good of a scorer at Texas A&M, and then all of a sudden he came here to UCF and he was, you know, a scoring machine. But the last couple of games, he really hasn't been that good. But the price is down to 6-1. I think he's fine for GPPs too.
What about
this is a game?
What about
this game really interests me.
Suggs with Broody out.
Yeah. I mean, he's 5'7". He's what, two of his last three over 20. I don't mind him. I think I would almost prefer JJ Miles for 200 more. Just because he plays, you know, almost 35 minutes a game, and he's, got a little bit better of rates, but, yeah, he's in play. I mean, all these, Newton, there's a lot in play in this ECU game because there's just so many guys under 6K that are in that cash range in the mid fives that could hit 4X rather easily. But they almost seemingly take turns. Whereas JJ Miles,
Miles got a decent log. He's actually got a decent log. Yeah.
So, but it's worrisome because, like I said, they haven't played since the beginning of February, so they've almost been off for 30 days, which maybe give me pause on a guy like TRW, but, man, I don't know. Gardner's just one of those guys that has that 40-plus upside, and if he's low-owned, I don't know. He may be more appealing to me than he should be. I'll have to think on that one. All right, next game, ASU versus Colorado. ASU going to Colorado. We know that's historically a pretty tough place to play, just because elevation and everything. KenPom has 81-69 in favor of Colorado. They're 259 tempo ranking, ASU 24th. It's really wild to see Kamani Lawrence priced at 8K. I mean, he can continue to light the world on fire, but it's not going to be a situation where I play him. He was good like 2 years ago, and then he started getting hurt all the time and kind of fell off and had been suffering, you know, and ailing a lot. And now he's seemingly healthy, but yeah, who in their right mind would pay that 8K price? Even if, you know, Christopher and Bagley and all those guys end up, you know, not sitting. I do know Bagley's been practicing this week, so that's a good sign. Christopher, I don't think, has been practicing, so I don't expect him to play, but there's a good chance Bagley does play. And then on Colorado's side, you know, I'm kind of being vague here so I can allow you to talk more. There's a lot to like on the bigs, the front court, because we know ASU, even with Lawrence playing well, Graham playing well, they've been a team that gets beat down low quite a bit. So I do have a little interest in, you know, Evan Batty at 4'7". I kind of think Dallas Walton is a bit sneaky at 3'9". People usually ignore him, but he's good for, you know, up to 20 fantasy points at that range there against a team like ASU. He doesn't have, like, the greatest rates in terms of usage is right around 21%, but his offensive rebounding rate is almost 7%. He has a combined rate of almost 30, block rate of 5.5%, draws 5 fouls per 40. He gets 5.5 fouls before he called on him. But the 7-footer, I think, you know, as a senior, and I'm pretty sure this is their last home game, so I assume it's senior day unless they did it over the weekend. You know, expect Walton to want to go out on top, right? McKinley Wright, senior as well. Jeriah Horn, Maddox Daniels, there's a lot of upperclassmen on this team. So, I don't know. I just have one of those weird Pete feelings about Dallas Walton having a nice game today. Not sure that I'll end up going there, but I do feel like he's in a great spot. Maybe Batty's more of a safer play. So, break down this one for us, Pete.
Yeah. This, you probably want to target one of these Colorado big guys. Maybe even try a Horn. I said I was done with him a month ago, but he's got a decent floor. I mean, his price 6'5", I really don't like, but he seems to put up over 20 every night. He's averaged almost 14 points, almost 7 rebounds. He still only gets like 24 minutes. So I guess at that 6'5" price, and I guess you drop down to Batty at 4'7". Batty is solid. I mean, it seems like anytime we've played Batty, he doesn't hurt us. He's always been, you know, he's always made value for us, you know, pretty much seems like. And they definitely are going to have an advantage today against ASU. I think ASU may be actually one of the worst rebound teams in the Pac-12, aren't they? So Batty probably is my play out of all this. Schwartz is a GPP play. You all know he can get hot and start tossing up threes, and I've won money off Deshaun Schwartz, but Batty is in play, and especially you got a senior like McKinley Wright, who I love. McKinley Wright, this could be one of his games of the year, and also we got an implied, you know, a high implied. So I could see a huge gain from McKinley right here at 85. I wish he was a little bit cheaper. I know I say that about a lot of guys, but this could be, you know, a swan song for Wright, and he's had over 40 DK the last two games. You know, just keep it rolling. I always, days I don't play him, I always regret it. So to me, he's one of the top players of the slate. So I like Wright and then Batty. I just can't get stuck playing Dryhorn again, even though I think Dryhorn's in a good spot.
Yeah,
somebody from Colorado's gonna have a good game. One of these big guys from Colorado's gonna have a good game here.
I would, go Walton or Batty before I go Dryhorn at 6'5". Definitely not doing that.
Yeah. Walton's 3'9" is not a bad price. I didn't realize Walton's 3'9".
Yeah. That's why. I'm looking at, you know, the matchup, his rates at that price, the minute, and another guy, you know, under 4.5K that has potential minutes issues, but. He's kind of like Kalkbrenner from Creighton, where if he gets 15 to 18 minutes and he starts, he could pulverize this squad. McKinley Wright's a nice call out. He's been, you know, over 40 the last two. I'm typically a McKinley Wright fader. He's chalk a lot, and he's usually, like, you know, putting up those 25 to 30 numbers, which are good, but he rarely breaks the slate until the last two games, right? The last two games, impressively against defenses like UCLA and USC, he's broken the slate. So I definitely have to give it to him. He's 8'5 now, which is probably too rich for me, just because I have been a McKinley Wright fader, but I don't mind that at all, especially in a senior day narrative. We're saying that, like, yep, you know, it's for sure senior day, last home game, even if they already had their senior day, which they may have, it's the last home game for him as an upperclassman. I doubt he'll be back next year. You know, it's time for him to go on, even if he ends up playing in Europe or whatever. I just don't see a guy like that returning. So he's going to want to go out on top, definitely. If you don't want to invest that kind of money, then, you know, it sounds like you and I are on the same wavelength, taking one of these, you know, Batty Walton. Batty was a guy that, as non-chalk, he was doing really well for me personally. In the beginning of the season, I was using him a lot. Now, recently, he's been under 5K, and he's been chalky a lot. And up until last game against UCLA, he's been underperforming. He did have an injury that he was playing through, so it depends. If he ends up being chalky, maybe I drop down to Walton instead, just for some leverage there. But, yeah, the value – there's a lot of tricky stuff going on with the value on this slate. So another one.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
This is going to be tough. Texas versus Oklahoma, another Big 12 game that I'm feeling. Usually I'm all about the SEC games, but today I'm all about Big 12. A lot of good games, this one especially. KenPom has it 72-71 in favor of Oklahoma. They're 203 tempo ranking, Texas 135. Austin Reeves has become a guy for me, almost just kind of like Moses Wright at this point. You know, he's not putting up to that quite level of numbers, but, you know, you and I talked about the other day, it's like, we're done getting, you know, beat fading Moses Wright and saying, damn, we should have played him and got these big points. We mentioned it almost a month ago, how every slate that Reeves is on, when we don't play him at the end of the slate, we're like, well, you know, we should have just played him. How easy would it have been to play him? And it's kind of, you know, so lately, the last two slates, I've been using him, even at the upper tier price. You know, I used him at 8.7 last slate. He got me 38. Before that, he put up 45 at 8.5. I know it's a high price at 8.9. Probably won't be that owned, but we know that Texas, another team that has that, you know, people feel like, you know, they're a good defense. You don't target against them, whatever. But they've been involved kind of like West Virginia a lot in games that are high scoring, faster paced than they should be on paper. And there's lots of guys coming out making value. So I don't expect Reeves to have much, if any, ownership at all, but I think I might be going back to the Austin Reeves train because he's consistently putting out 30-plus, and we know from that West Virginia game middle of February, he's got the 50-point upside in his bag. And last time against Texas on their floor in 39 minutes of work, he put up 36.5 fantasy points, which was 23-6-4. No steals, no blocks. Straight up just old-school blocks, rebounds – I'm sorry, rebounds, assists, and points, which is impressive. Now, I'm willing to overpay a little bit for Austin Reeves if that's my floor. My floor is 35. Yeah, give it to me all day long because I have the value on this slate already established. It's a little risky, but everything this year has been a little risky because of COVID. And guys' floors have been really wacky. But one constant in all of this has been Austin Reeves. You know, show me a game where, you know, you'd be disappointed with Austin Reeves. You know, that was, you know, obviously you can go all the way back to the beginning of January. And you see there's a game against TCU where he was in the low 20s. Okay, so I found a game we disappointed, but you had to go all the way back to that point to find one. He's had, you know, 12 games straight where he's been over 30, and it hasn't even been a sloppy 30. It's been a pretty efficient, solid game. And Texas just doesn't scare me. I mean, we're seeing guys score against Texas every single slate. So I think Reeves is well worth the 8-9 if you can make it work. I think I would pay for him over McKinley Wright, even though McKinley Wright, you know, on paper, maybe his matchup's a little better. But there's your leverage right there for 400 more. Reeves has a higher, in my mind, a higher upside than McKinley Wright. The other guys on the team, you know, Manic just had a big game. Kudos to the guys in chat who called that. He's up to 5 for you. Get Harmon 6'8". All good options. Harkless 5'9". But I, you know, they're all priced where they should be. If I'm going to use an Oklahoma guy, and I probably am, I'm going all the way up to Austin Reeves. And I'll gladly, you know, drive that bus alone. I'll be on Austin Reeves Island. It's a very warm climate, Austin Reeves Island, and it's a very nice, safe place to be. So I'm gonna be rolling with him. On the Texas side, you got Andrew Jones there at 6'6". That's very appealing for GPPs. I know Courtney Ramey. We have a couple Ramey fans in the chat. He's had, what, 30 in 2 of his last 4 games. So he's got some nice upside there. Kai Jones, who is a guy that I had been using when he was under 5K and doing well with, he's up to almost 6K now. He's kind of the future, man. I mentioned it before. He doesn't start the games, Greg Brown does, but when it's the second half and the game's on the line, it's Kai Jones on the floor, not Greg Brown, which has really limited Greg Brown's ceiling recently. But I know you're probably going to talk a little bit about Greg Brown because he is only 5'2". And then you have Jericho Sims down there at 4'4", too. So those guys are more appealing than Kai Jones, but it just seems, like I said, Kai Jones is the one on the floor in crunch time. So on Oklahoma side, you got a good bunch of guys who are priced correctly but appealing. And on Texas side, you got a few guys who are maybe a little underpriced and appealing. So what's the move here?
I don't, this to me, this seems like one of those games where it's more of a better game than DFS. And you will get Manic low loan because he's not popping up much at all. I mean, at this point, but I definitely see where you're coming from. Because he's so involved in that offense. He does everything for him. And the first game against Texas, he had a big game. He had, I think, 36 DK points. So I definitely see how you like Reeves. It may be for me between Reeves and Wright. I'm more of a Wright guy, but Reeves has been putting up quietly. Manic is, yep. Manic now, is Manic back? I mean, at 5'9", is he? I mean, it's a decent price. I don't know if I want to take a chance on him in something like cash, but people are going to be asking that question: is Brady Manic back after the last game he had? He did have a decent game. I'm not sure if I want to be the one that takes a chance, but he had 20 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, a block in 38 minutes. So you get Brady Manic playing 38 minutes at 5'9", I mean, definitely GPP. But yeah, so Reeves is my top. On the Texas side, I actually like Jericho Sims at 4'4". Now, the last game, everybody didn't see that dud the last game, but he got in foul trouble. So you almost have to X that out. I think he only played like eight or nine minutes. But if you look at his stats before that, he was on a nice roll, especially at that price. Playing, you know, 25 to 30 minutes is what we like. So Sims and me and Greg Brown is cheap, huh? 5'2", he's getting a little early, low 20s usage. But then you look at that dud against Tech, kind of that dud against West Virginia. I was so happy with his four most of the season. It looks like his four has dropped a little bit in the last like 3 games. So he should get you 20. So he should get you 4 times. But I got to look at the other prices. I mean, everybody else around 5K. I mean, with Brown, I guess Brown has got to be in play. I just can't remember if there's anybody else we've talked about at 5K that's a better
he's
play.
Just, the thing that kills Brown is if he has a bad first half, you're dead because mm-hmm. He's not playing the second. I mean, he is playing the second half, but at the 10-minute and below mark, he's not playing. So that's the tough part.
In the Tech game, he only played 13 minutes. You know, in Kansas, he played 20 minutes. I can't be playing Greg Brown in only 20 minutes. So if anybody, it'll be Jericho as long as he keeps his ass out of foul trouble, and he does seem to get 3 or 4 every game. So he hasn't fouled. I think I'm looking now. He's only fouled that one or two games this year. So kind of like that 4-4 price. So to me, this is more of a real game instead of a DFS game. The best play out of all, obviously, is going to be Reeves. He's got a hell of a ceiling. And to me, Matt Coleman at 6'4 is just Matt Coleman. I like Coleman a lot, but I've kind of stopped playing him. But he looks at his logs. He always seems to get you. Last game was a little bit low. He always seems to get you 25 DK, but you know he'll get you 4 times. So Coleman is there. Coleman's turned to cash play, which is weird. His usage rate is really down though. Matt Coleman, doesn't it seem like last year his usage rate was much higher? It's only like 16%, right? 16, 17%. I'm seeing.
Yeah, he's definitely deferring to guys like Jones. His shot rate last year in conference was in the mid-20s. I'm fairly confident in that. So, yeah, he's way down this season. More of a facilitator role and a defensive guy, just because all these other guys that are shooting like Ramey and Jones. The reason Texas, though, is just because, like I said, kind of quietly, their games are being played in the 80s. You know, they had that West Virginia game in the 80s. They had an overtime game with Kansas in the mid-70s. Against Iowa State, you know, they gave up almost 70 to them in the win. Last time they played Oklahoma, it was 80-79. They lost, you know, by one. So it just seems like there's going to be a ton of points here, man. But you might be right. Maybe it's just balanced on both sides and there's not a lot of fantasy action here.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
So, and it's weird. You know, I thought Jace Fabreeze coming back from his injury, he was going to be a big factor on this team because Shaka was so excited about, yeah, we're getting our shooting, you know, we're shooting back. But Andrew Jones and Courtney Ramey have played so well that it's just made Fabreeze a non-factor. But I'm kind of disappointed because I like Jace Fabreeze and I thought he was going to be good. But
me too. I was right there with you. I thought he was going to be as soon as he came back. I think didn't we play in the game the day he came back?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And he only played a few minutes. And then the game after that, he didn't play at all. So it's like, well, shit, you just can't use the guy. Yeah. All right, Nebraska versus Iowa is the last game on the slate. Nebraska has two games left on their schedule here, Iowa and Northwestern. That's on Sunday, so we'll have some more Nebraska for our DFS pleasure. KenPom has an 85-68 in favor of Iowa. Obviously, Iowa games always have fantasy points because they play faster, and they also don't play a lot of defense. Nebraska's 39th in tempo ranking, Iowa 118th. Garza slate. The question is always, you know, will you or won't you play Garza? Nebraska is going to not be a team that can contain him, but you kind of got to get in the question of if this turns into a blowout, how much will Garza be needed in these type of games? Garza, if you know, Iowa's been on TV a ton. Obviously, Garza media is crazy for Garza. Garza, Garza. He has been deferring a lot in games where the outcome is never really in danger. So if they start off, you know, and he hits a shot and Wieskamp hits a couple triples and Frederick and you know, whatever, he'll let up off the gas. He's not a killer in that way, if that makes sense. You know, he'll gladly just defer to everyone else. Now, it is helpful that Nunge is out because that's where a lot of his minutes would go. So maybe he does end up playing more in this game than you would think. But I don't know. I just at almost 10K, I'm worried about it. And if he's you know, and I've taken this hard stance all season long. When Garza's chalky, I typically just fade because fading him has been a very profitable move. You know, out of every 10 games, he breaks the slate like three times. And those three times, if you don't have him, you lose. Yes, but you've got seven other times really that fading him as chalk has been a profitable move for you. So I'll probably keep fading him. And you had mentioned Keegan Murray. You know, at 4-6 with no Nunge against Nebraska, he would be a nice play. Joe Wieskamp is back down to the low 7-4. I think he's back in play. If you're fading Garza, you can pair up Murray and Wieskamp and really do some serious damage. TJ Frederick still down there at 4-6. I don't really mess around with him too much, but he is another value guy. Connor McCaffrey at 3-7, maybe he's got some interest there. Jordan Bohannon is not really my dude, but I know some people at 5-8 are going to be gaga for him. So there's a lot to like for Iowa if you're fading Garza. Now, if you just want to get those safe points, and I don't have any problem if you do want to do that, because obviously playing him is rarely going to net you less than 30 fantasy points. But it's just a question of if he's going to hit, you know, 50 or not. Because if he hits 40 and you fade today, I think you're still very much alive. It's not a Drew Smith situation where, you know, he broke the slate because he was 6'3". At 9'8", 40 is still just, you know, barely making that 4x marker. I don't know. I don't think I see a 50 in here for him. I think other guys like Wieskamp, Murray, Frederick will definitely help. I would feel a lot better about the fade if Nunge was around, but he's not. So, you know, you just have to kind of decide that for yourself. But I'm on the fade end of things here. On Nebraska side, we saw Lat Mayan just go completely berserk, had a career game, 25 actual points. He had five triples. He had like 24 fantasy points at halftime, ended up with 34. Now he's 4-8. I don't know. You know, I'm not going to play him. If you want to chase that, then fine. He's got decent upside at this price point still. And he's been a decent shooter. He has a shot rate right around 20%, but he's, you know, one of the better 3-point shooters on the team. He has attempted 114 triples. He's shooting right around 37%. So the volume is there for the kid. You know, it's not like he just kind of came out of nowhere last game. It's like, whoa, what the hell? He's been playing mid-20s. He's been taking a ton of shots, a lot of threes mostly. So he will take them if you want to, you know, chase that performance. If he gets hot again, he will make that 4X rather easily. It was ridiculous last game, though, because he scored like 12 or 12, 14 actual points in a row, and they just kept feeding him, and he couldn't be stopped. So Thor, that was another fade that we had. I had last second that was kind of bad. You know, 3-6, he put up 25. He's up to 4-9 now. I'll probably not use that. If I'm going to use anyone from Nebraska here, I think Banton is back in play. You know, 6-6 now is a lot better playing him at 5-9, and because he hasn't quite looked like the early season Banton. But at 6-6 against, you know, Iowa, he's certainly a better play than my man Trey McGowan's, who's, you know, 500-600 more at 7-1. But I definitely think Nebraska guys here, they're playing loose. You know, they don't have anything to lose. There's no pressure on them. They're well coached. Obviously, the mayor's a good coach. So I don't know. I see some guys coming out of this one playing pretty well. Maybe even a guy like Derek Walker, because he's got foul trouble too. But Iowa's also, you know, with their defense being bad all around, they've given up some big scores to rebounding / you know, adequate big men. So maybe Walker could have himself a nice day. He's had back-to-back 23-plus fantasy point performances. I could see, you know, potentially using him there. And then Chalky Kobe Webster from last late at 4-3. I don't know that he'll be that high on this time, just because he's kind of a guy that if he's not making his threes, he's not going to offer you a whole lot. But at 4-3, again, he's going to play, you know, roughly 25, 30 minutes as a starter. I could certainly advocate for that. So a lot to like here. It's always, you know, Iowa fantasy explosions. There'll probably be a lot of ownership here. What are you doing, Garza and company?
Yeah, I haven't decided if I'm going to fade Garza yet or not. It's, I don't know. I usually end up leaning toward the side of playing him myself. But what worries me, though, is definitely the blowout factor today. I was actually watching a press conference earlier, and Fran McCaffrey was on there, and they're talking about Jack Nungeon with him being out. And he actually said that Chris Murray and Josh Ugundeli are maybe seeing some meaningful playing time in the last final two games. And if anything, plus, like, to me, like, that gives a big boost. I like Keegan Murray a lot today at 4-6, because especially in a blowout, I could see Murray getting a lot of minutes today. I mean, he's already putting in, what, 22 and 21 the last two. So I like that price on Murray a lot, especially with Nungeau. So Murray's high, my favorite Iowa player. And of course, I'm looking now and he's projected high. So it ain't like he's going to be a seeker anyways. But all these guys, I mean, Weisskamp's in play. Like you said, he's back down to a manageable salary, right? 7-4. He's been higher than that, correct? He was up 8-7 just a week ago. So, but I'll get Keegan Murray. Murray on the other side. If anything, Webster. I could go right back to Webster, really, and I'm kind of like that. But he's not projected real high. With Allen is done now, right? So that's going to definitely give Webster some minutes, and he's been playing over 20 minutes. Last two games, 21 DK and 16 DK. He's starting, getting the playing time. So, to me, Webster's probably my favorite Nebraska because of that price at 4-3. And you're going to got it's going to put some minutes up. I'm not messing with Latt at all. Not messing with Banton at all. It's just a GPP. I guess it's Webster I like. So, I like, you know, of course, Garza, Keegan Murray, and Webster. I guess if you don't play Garza, if you do the Garza fade, do you got to play? Do you need to play Joe Weisskamp now? Is it still that factor?
I think normally yes, but if they're gonna play other guys, like you said, meaningful minutes, or it turns into a blowout, they may want to just get out of there with the easy win, nobody hurt. So I don't know. Normally, yes, but I don't think so. Not today. I have this peculiar feeling that Iowa's going to play a lot of guys today and just get some experience for these guys heading into the tournament.
It's going to be a blowout, and just from McCaffrey's comments. So you
If you're going to play Garza, I think you play Murray. Maybe not Wieskamp, yeah. But you go down and you definitely play Murray. You know, maybe this is a game where they want to get Murray. Heading into the tournament, you know, for a young kid like this, it's scary. So they want him to, you know, go in on a high note.
That's the direction I think I'm taking as of right now. I mean, if I say that a lot, then I end up with Garza on my main lineup at the end of the day. But right now, I can see fading Garza and going to Murray.
Yeah, and I don't want to tell anyone that if you're rushing Garza, you're wrong. It's right. He saves points. He's typically going to do well. It's just a matter of, is he going to break the slate? I don't think so. And I'm just talking because I've done well fading him. The slates I did fade where he broke the slate, yeah, I was a struggle. But I don't know. I just feel like 10K is a lot. I'm very happy he's almost 10K as opposed to like 9-1 or 8-7 or something, so I can actually fade him because I just think he's going to defer a lot today.
Yeah, there's been many times I've said I'm fading Garza, and then he's on my main lineup, so I can't tell you which way I'm going yet.
And they're playing again at home on Sunday against Wisconsin, and that'll be the true swan song for Garza. So, you know, as long as they don't get caught with a look ahead today, and Nebraska keeps it close somehow, then yeah, expect minutes to be down across the board for their big dogs, I would say. All right, prize picks. Let's pull up some prize picks. I have two right away, and I wrote him last time he was on there, and it worked out, even though because he had a good game in the overtime. But Jared Butler, I think there's fantasy points and there's single points. He has both. I'm going to lean for his fantasy points, which is 29.4. I think he's going to easily go up over 30. His single point total is there too. I'm not going to feature that one. It's 18. I think, you know, obviously he's capable of that too, but I would just rather lean on the fantasy score because he's going to get assists, deals, you know, all that good stuff. So Butler, 29.4. And then I'm sticking with the Reeves train, man, 33.8. Maybe some people think that's going to be high, but I think Austin Reeves over 33.8 is right there in the wheelhouse. He's going to be doing everything for them here today against Texas. Expect a close game. And I think he's going to do it for us. So those are my two featured plays today. What are you seeing here?
I like on the fantasy point side, the Coleman at 25. I think he's been hitting that. He's pretty much the same rate every day, right? I think he's been. I'm not sure actually what he did. We did the last game, but I'm liking Coleman more and more today, as we're talking about it. So I could probably lean Matt Coleman. They have such a strong backcourt, man. Coleman's so consistent, and of course Butler, yeah.
And then there's single point side. Kansas is playing UTEP, I guess. There's Agbaji 13.5, Jalen Wilson 13. You could definitely take either one of those. I think they should, you know, nice little end of season tune up for them heading into the Big 12 tournament. They've already completed their conference schedule. UTEP is not a pushover team by any means. They're filled with many different transfers. They've actually got a guy they know, Oklahoma transfer Jamal Bieniemy. But yeah, I like Wilson's over 13. He's been such an enigma all season because, you know, he started off hot and then he went through that run where he was just trash and now he's back to being good again. So I think either one of those are fine. I probably won't. I don't know if I'll feature them or not, but I'm definitely on the Reeves Butler train and maybe I'll join you with Coleman.
You know what would be nice if Prize Picks did, and I'd probably see the reason why they don't, is like have like player stats, like you hit on Fats Russell and see how many Prize Pick points he did for every game. That'd be cool.
Oh yeah, they probably
they'd lose their edge. Probably.
I wish they would have true props too, and do assists and rebounds because in years past on some books when they've had props, they don't they usually limit you because they're so easy. But assists and rebounds, I made a lot of money 1 year on it was the year Admiral Schofield and Grant were at Tennessee. And they would have like rebound over 5.5 for Grant, and it's like, yeah, easy over. So hopefully they'll do some of that
here. They may be some of the other competition is doing some of that. So
yeah, but that's pretty much it. Nice slate here. Look forward to seeing us continue to do, you know, podcasts here. We'll definitely have another one tomorrow morning for the Friday slate. Back to streaming on Saturday morning. Pete, any final words before we head out and you get going on your other sports?
No, it's a manageable slate. I don't see a lot of major chalk here, so it could be interesting. You know, as day goes on, it may develop. So No, it's a good slate. Not crazy.
Yeah. All right. So once again, if you guys are not a part of our YFC content yet, be sure to get over to yourfielderschoice.com. March Madness promo, 50% off. $25 gets you access to every single sport we offer, from esports, MLB, maybe some KBO action here soon. And of course, March Madness. So my name is Walter. That's Pete. Catch you guys next time on the podcast tomorrow morning. Thank you very much. Let's win lots of money. And thanks for all the support.
Good luck, everyone. Thanks.